Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. My name is Jennifer Stiles. I'm the Senior Marketing Manager for Nursing here at Jones and Bartlett Learning, and I'm joined today by Susan Bastable. She's a registered nurse and currently serves as a chair and professor of the Department of Nursing at Le Moyne College in Syracuse, New York. Susan has 23 years of teaching and administrative experience in higher education at the master's level, bachelor's level, and postmaster's levels. Her areas of expertise include principles of teaching and learning, curriculum, program development, and educational assessment and evaluation. Susan is one of our renowned authors here at Jones and Bartlett Learning, and she joins us today to talk a little bit about Nurse as Educator, Principles of Teaching and Learning for Nursing Practice, the fourth edition of her textbook that we'll publish later on this month. I'd like to welcome you, Susan.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to join you. Hello, everyone. The importance of this book is to nurses, their role as educators and teachers. By law, all nurses are expected to teach, regardless of their level of education. They may be associate degree prepared, bachelor's degree prepared, or maybe all the way up to doctoral level. But we are all required to teach by law. That is our Nurse Practice Acts, all of them in every state in this country and territories in this country, expect nurses to take on the role of teaching others. But very few nurses have ever had a course in exactly how to teach, what are the principles of teaching and learning. So you deal with all kinds of audiences. They are patients and families. That's a very common audience for nurses in practice. You also teach colleagues, other staff members. You teach students. Oftentimes you serve as clinical preceptors, or you are serving as an adjunct, or you actually are a faculty member in a school of nursing. And oftentimes now, more times now than ever before, we serve as teachers of the general public out there. We hold a lot of community sessions and we teach patients about health promotion, disease prevention measures, and so on. So it's very important that nurses know how to teach. I contend that billions of dollars could be saved in the healthcare system every year if we knew how to appropriately teach others, especially patients and their families, to get them into a role where they can self-manage, they can independently follow a prescribed plan of care. We also want to help make other staff nurses and our students competent in their roles as in delivering care, and we need to teach them how to better do that. The fact that billions of dollars every year are lost, a lot of that is due, and there's a lot of research out there that proves this, that a lot of dollars are lost per year, wasted actually, because of non-compliance. Patients don't do what we ask them to do, and that's not that we're necessarily dictating to them, but we do prescribe how they can best care for themselves, and oftentimes they don't do it the way we thought they should do it or the way we told them to do it, and we think that they just don't want to comply. And my contention is that's not always the case. Matter of fact, many times I think the problem is they didn't understand what they were supposed to do, not that they didn't want to do it. So that not only do we lose a lot of money on people who have to come back to our care for further assistance because they didn't comply in the first place, but it's also because their quality of life has gone down, maybe that they've even had gotten sicker, or that they actually do not survive in the death because they did something wrong, not knowing that they weren't doing it correctly. Nurses will always tell you, I don't have time to teach. That's the biggest barrier to teaching. I don't have time. I'm so busy in my schedule. I have so many patients to handle in an acute care setting, for example. But if nurses knew how to teach and to do it right the first time, they wouldn't have to go back and have to repeat things again, or they wouldn't have to reteach something because they did it right the first time. This is how they would save time. So there are basic guidelines in this book about how to teach the, what we call the principles of teaching and learning. That is, what does somebody need to know? Not necessarily what is nice to know, but need to know information. And you present that information in a simple manner, using everyday living room language, for example. And you use the teach-back method. Instead of asking a question, do you understand, which most people can answer with a yes or no, you say, tell me what you just heard. Or, after I've described this to you, now how would you do this when you're home alone? Those kinds of things where it demands an answer from them so you can find out if, in fact, they truly understood what you were saying to them. Nurses then need to be competent and confident in their role as a teacher. And they need to know how to do this so that they are efficient and effective in their role. Personally, I think that I have a course called Nurses Educator, or Principles of Teaching and Learning could be another name of the course that I teach. We teach that at both the undergrad and graduate level. It's a required course in both our bachelor's level and our master's level programs. Why? Because, again, all nurses, regardless of the level at which they're at in education, need to know how to teach. So that is really the context of this whole book, has to do with principles of teaching and learning. Now I'd like to move on to what is new in this fourth edition book. I'd like to take just a few minutes to go through some of the highlights. Let me just say that, first of all of the chapters have updated references. They also have new websites. And we've also provided some new examples of application to practice so that each content area, you can see how that content can be applied to practice. I did take into account what I think it was 13 reviewers of my third edition book, my fourth edition, told me I should do, and one of them was, please provide case studies at the end of each chapter. And that's exactly what we have done. So the student can read a case study at the end of the chapter, and it will be a scenario that really requires them then to have understood the content of the chapter and then be able to respond to that scenario with some questions questions asked of them so they can answer those questions. I think it's a really fine way of students who are reading the chapters to be able to apply what they have learned. So the biggest new thing are those case studies at the end of each chapter. The other thing, content-wise, every single chapter, all 14 chapters have been revised. So I'll just give you some highlights of a few major areas that have been added to the book that are not in the third edition. In Chapter 1, which is known as the Overview of Education and Healthcare, we have included the Institute of Medicine along with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that just gave a report in 2011 of the future of nursing. And most of you are very familiar with that. So we talk about the recommendations of the IOM report. Of course, a lot of that has to do with nursing education itself, but it also has to do with the scope of practice of nurses as well. We also included Pat Benner's Transformation of Nursing Education and the points that she has made there. We added a section on Nursing Alliance for Quality Care, known as the NAQC, which has to do with patient engagement and consumer-centered care, a patient-centered approach to care. And there are 9 core principles of that NAQC, and so that this really gives us an insight into our need as nurses to be advocates for our patients and help them in getting involved in their own decision-making. Also in Chapter 1 are things on quality and safety in nursing, the QSEN competencies for healthcare delivery. And we also could not ignore the new Affordable Care Act, the legislation that President Obama has signed into law that really has to do with universal accessibility to healthcare, which has the potential to transform the healthcare system and certainly nurses, probably more so almost than any other healthcare provider, will be playing a very crucial role in the Affordable Care Act in providing care to the nation's people. And 32 million more Americans will be going on the insurance rolls because of this ACA, Affordable Care Act, and we need to know more about that. So those are some new things in Chapter 1. In Chapter 2, we have added a very interesting section called the Ethics of the Patient-Provider Relationship, and also a section on the Ethics of the Student-Teacher Relationship. This is very new from an ethical point of view, and I think it really adds a nice dimension to Chapter 2. Chapter 3, we have added some new content on motor learning. And we look at the stages of motor learning and the motor learning variables and what it means by mental practice. And it's a wonderful addition because motor learning has also a strong relationship to what is known as the learning curve, which you'll find in Chapter 10, and it relates directly to that, the content that we've presented to you in Chapter 3. Chapter 4, 5 have had changes to them, but the next major change is in Chapter 6 on motivation and compliance. And there we look at motivational interviewing and the different steps in carrying out what they call MI, motivational interviewing. And interestingly enough, Michelle Dart, D-A-R-T, who was a former student of mine, has done a book through Jones and Bartlett, or J.B. Learning, Jones and Bartlett as it used to be known, J.B. Learning, the same publisher as my textbook. Michelle Dart has done a whole book on motivational interviewing, so I highly recommend you take a look at that. It's a very interesting concept of how to work with patients and families. Chapter 7 on literacy is one of my favorite chapters. I've been teaching literacy since 1990 when it was not even talked about before. But there are a lot of some wonderful things happening in the literacy area, particularly health literacy. There's a difference between literacy, that's the ability to read or how well somebody reads and comprehends information, and then health literacy, which has to do with understanding health. And then there's e-health literacy, which is electronic health literacy, and we have to know more about that as well. So that's some new content in Chapter 7. There are some major national landmark initiatives that support health literacy, and most of them have come out since 2010. So given the fact that my third edition was a 2008 book, they didn't have this stuff in there. So now this new edition will. And one of the main things I want to point out is that President Obama signed into law in 2010 what's called the Plain Writing Act, and that means that all government publications have to be writing in a way that is understandable to the general population. It also has to do with the Affordable Care Act that has come out, so health literacy is a huge issue in the Affordable Care Act. And there is such a thing known as the NAP, National Action Plan. And the National Action Plan has 7 goals to it, and it has to do with strategies to promote effective improvement in health literacy. And so you'll find that it's not just a report, the NAP is not just a report on the state of the problem of health literacy, but it actually goes into strategies that can be used to improve health literacy. So health literacy websites have been updated, new audiovisual resources on health literacy are there, so you can have videos on this. It's really quite an excellent resource. And the other thing we added in Chapter 7 is new measures of health literacy skills. The newest vital sign, we expanded on that. We expanded on what's known as TOFLA and the REALM, which are also other measures to determine health literacy skills. And then a new section called e-heals, H-E-A-L-S, e-heals, which stands for Electronic Health Literacy Scale. And all of those measures are also in the appendix, in Appendix A in the book, so they tell you how to use those different measurement tools. Chapter 8 goes on to the LGBT population, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender population, and we're looking at patients who are LGBT patients as well as students who may be lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And this Chapter 8 is on the gender, socioeconomic, cultural aspects of teaching and learning, and so this fits right into the gender portion of that chapter. It looks on statistics of LGBT. It looks on ways to intervene, strategies to take. And what's interesting is it references the faculty role. And a study by one of my former master's students on the LGBT population, a survey she did indicates that faculty are not aware of this particular population group and how to deal with them in the classroom and clinical, and how to provide resources for them so that they feel a sense of equality. And it's very, very interesting content. To move on, I'd like to mention that in Chapter 9, it was a complete overhaul, and I'm very, very proud of this new chapter. It used to be called Special Populations, which I think is very much of an outdated term, and now we call it Educating Learners with Disabilities. And it truly, well, you truly threw out Chapter 9 from the third edition and started all again. It's also still Chapter 9, but it's now on Educating Learners with Disabilities, and I feel that it has phenomenal content in there, and I think that it will be a wonderful new addition to the fourth edition of this Nurses Educator. Chapter 10, I'll briefly mention that we always, in that chapter, we always talked about how to write good objectives, but it never did a very good job on how to write good goals. So that's been improved upon. Chapter 11, we have some really new, nice content on group learning, and you'll find that under group discussion, but it's expanded to include other methods related to group learning, which is things like guided learning, collaborative learning, team-based learning, cooperative learning, studies, and seminars as some of the instructional methods. And finally, Chapter 13, and that's on technology and education. Let me tell you, this is the most challenging thing to keep updated, because technology is moving so fast and changing so fast that it's hard to put a chapter in hard print and that not change rapidly as well. We can't seem to revise it fast enough, but what has been done to it is totally updated for as of now, and I think it was looking in the future as well, so I think you'll find it a very inspiring chapter. So, you know, to end this part of the podcast, I'd like to say that I really thank you for joining me today, and I hope I've given you a nice overview of not only why nurses, educator, principals, teaching and learning is so important for nursing and nurses in practice, but also, and faculty who are teaching nurses to go into practice, but also the fact that I really enjoyed the chance to share with you some of the new aspects of my fourth edition book. So again, thanks for joining me, and it was nice talking with you. Bye now.
Thanks so much for your time today, Susan. I just want to let all of our listeners know that if you would like to order a review copy, please visit go.jblearning.com/bastable4e. That will conclude today's podcast. Thanks for joining us.